We're going to talk about atrial fibrillation. Furthermore, known further from this point forward as AFib. That's the easiest way for
me to
go with that. Even though I happen to do the pronouncing for the spelling bee, at this time in the morning, it is still hard to get around the atrial fibrillation. But somebody who knows a lot about that is Dr. David Rose. He joins us this morning. It's Stroke Awareness Month, and we're going to find out the kind of correlation or the connection between AFib and strokes. Doctor, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. How are you?
We're great. And I'm Bruce along with Matt this morning. Craig's off today.
Oh, okay. No Craig today. Hi, Bruce.
No problem. Just wanted to get an idea. It's a Stroke Awareness Month. And if we could kind of just give the brief definition of what occurs when a stroke takes place, and then we'll tie in how the AFib is connected to that, if you could.
Sure. My pleasure. And first, let me say shout out to all my friends in Shaker Heights. I used to live over there. I'm in Florida now, and I run the neuro ICU down here at Tampa General Hospital. And what I do all day, every day, is take care of stroke patients, so people who have basically a clogged pipe in their brain, and therefore, if they can't move half their body, their arm, their leg, have a facial droop or slurred speech, can't speak, etc. This can all happen from a heart condition known as atrial fibrillation. And that's an irregular heart rate. Basically, the electricity in the heart is not working that well. It's irregular. And some people may feel the symptoms of AFib as, the palpitations or the butterflies in their heart, for example. And what happens in AFib is the blood starts to pool. It coagulates inside the heart, forms a clot. And then when the heart beats faster, the clot can flick off, essentially, and head to the brain and clog up one of the arteries, the pipes in the brain, and therefore cause a stroke. And so my job is to take care of these patients as a neurologist when they come into the ER and then when they go to the ICU with their strokes.
How do we know if we're experiencing AFib? What are signs or symptoms, and what maybe not AFib that we think it is?
That's a great question. So 50% of the time, people don't even have symptoms from atrial fibrillation. But when they do, it's typically classically the butterflies in the heart. Your heart's racing much faster than it should be. And this is not when you're exercising or when you're anxious, but rather when you're sitting at home watching TV, for example, and all of a sudden, for no reason, it just starts to beat wildly and out of control. You may feel lightheaded or dizzy, like you're about to pass out, for example. Those could all be signs of atrial fibrillation. And of course, if the clot in the heart from the AFib were to flick off and go to the brain, then you got to be aware about stroke symptoms, right? So half your body going weak or numb, having the slurred speech or the difficulty expressing your speech or understanding speech, those could all be signs of a stroke. So if you have either one of these types of symptoms from the heart or in the brain, then you got to get to the emergency room immediately because there are certain things that we can do there to help reverse these conditions.
If someone finds themselves diagnosed with AFib, what are some things they can do to help combat it?
Great question. So basically, what we recommend for patients who have a diagnosis of atrial fibrillation is to be on a strong blood thinner, an anticoagulant, it's called. For example, like Pradaxa, which is one of the new ones that have come on the market recently. And that will help prevent a stroke because people with atrial fibrillation are at a 5 times greater risk of having a stroke from the AFib than people without AFib. So these blood thinners that have come out are excellent at thinning the blood just enough so that the clot doesn't form in the heart and coagulate and flick off and go to the brain.
So at this point, we're not treating the AFib. We're treating what the cause that could actually result in the blood clot and the stroke, for that matter.
Well, that's a good point. And the question is, are there things to do both? And the answer is yes. We do have some medications that can lower your heart rate, and there are some medications to take you out of AFib. But they're imperfect, and even if we were to shock, there's some devices that help shock the heart rhythm back into a normal sinus rhythm instead of an irregular beat. But unfortunately, they're imperfect, and so the patient can still revert back to the irregular beat and then have a stroke. So we say that let's treat them with an anticoagulant anyway, just because you never know when they're going to go back and forth from irregular to regular and then irregular again. So let's just be on the safe side and use the blood thinners to protect them from having a stroke by forming the clots in the heart.
Is the AFib something certain ages get this, or how do we know? Is if you get it once, does it occur again? Is it sort of a chronic thing? What's the situation with
it? It can be chronic. Usually, it is in older folks. As we get older, we do have an increased risk of having AFib. However, there are a number of patients who have a genetic link to AFib, and their parents had it, their grandparents had it, and they're going to have it just because of genetics that we're still working on research, trying to find out exactly why different people get AFib. But, of course, there are some risk factors like hypertension, meaning high blood pressure, smoking, for example, high cholesterol. All these things may contribute to the risk of atrial fibrillation. So, obviously, if you have hypertension, make sure you know your numbers and you're on blood pressure meds to lower it to a normal safe number, 120 over 80, for example. If you have high cholesterol, make sure you're on a pill to lower your cholesterol, or diet control to, you know, reduce the fats in the diet to lower your cholesterol. And, of course, if you're a smoker, for goodness sakes, it's 2017, you shouldn't be smoking. So, obviously, stop. We know that that definitely increases the risk of stroke, AFib, and, of course, not to mention cancers and other problems. So these are some things that we can do to protect ourselves from AFib. But at the end of the day, we may just be having the DNA, the genetics, to develop it. So there are certain things that you can do and certain things are out of our control. But either way, it's good to know if you have it and see your doctor and talk with them about the medications that you should be on if you do have that condition.
Again, it's Stroke Awareness Month. We've talked a lot about the stroke, AFib. If people want to get more details or just kind of rehash what we talked about, where's a good place to get some good information, Doctor?
Of course, online is great. I would recommend the American Heart Association / American Stroke Association, AHA.org. Certainly, they have a lot of great information about AFib and stroke. And talk to your doctor. Have a meaningful conversation if you have AFib about your options. Can you take a blood thinner like an anticoagulant like Pradaxa or one of the other ones on the market and prevent yourself from having a stroke? Obviously, I take care of strokes all day, every day, but if I can reduce that number just by having conversations with you on the air, then that's huge. And we really appreciate the time that you discussed with me this morning to help folks out there.
Dr. Rose, we appreciate your time and your expertise. Thanks for sharing with us this morning.
My pleasure.